The Melbourne AA Steps Weekend, 2009. Here's Lil, sharing on step two.
Hi, I'm Lil, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety day is the 16th of February last year, and that's when I got sober. This is my favourite step because this is where the hope is. That first step is sort of a bit depressing. We have admitted that we're powerless over alcohol and our life has become unmanageable. I'll just start by telling you a bit of my story. I grew up in Melbourne, and I was essentially, as a kid, I was a good girl. I went to church, I was in the church choir, and then when I went into secondary school, I realised that being a good girl didn't really serve me. It didn't really give me the friends that I wanted or make me as cool as I wanted to be. So I learnt that being good didn't serve me right. So to get attention, I quit the church and I started to become a bit more sort of naughty. When I was 15, I picked up my first drink, and it wasn't, you know, I binge drink like the rest of them, you know, sometimes, but I wasn't an alcoholic since I picked up my first drink. I got alcohol poisoning though, on my first drink, and I had a fake ID, and I used to, you know, go out on a Thursday night and Nelly sort of rock up to school, wagging both first and second period on a Friday morning. But you know, life travelled along. I finished school. When I was 18, I got engaged, and when that fell apart, that's when my drinking really started, and it really, really crept up on me. I went from, you know, just going to cocktail parties and having a couple of drinks to noticing that my behaviour was getting more and more out of control, and but I didn't know what was happening to me. I knew that my grandmother was an alcoholic, and she died of alcoholism, and I always had those warnings in my family, but I didn't see that. I didn't see that in myself, and over the years, my life just became more and more unmanageable, and then some sort of depression set in, and I'd have a month off work to get over this depression, so I decided to go and work up the ski fields, and I drank every night up there until about 5 o'clock in the morning, and I would teach kids how to ski the next day, and I'd still be half pissed, but everyone did that up there, and I got really physically unwell up there. I had pneumonia, and I would still roll out of bed to go to the pub every day. And when I came home from Mount Buller, that's when the depression got worse. My drinking, when other people go home from like working in a ski field, they get back to their normal life. But I was still drinking like I was up there, and I would get drunk, and I would have sort of attention-seeking suicide attempts. When I was 22, I wound up in my first psych ward, and I saw a psychiatrist through that, and he said to me, "Look, I'm not exactly sure what's wrong with you, Lil, but you need to stop drinking for a while. But I'm sure one day you'll be able to, in 3 months' time, you'll be able to have a drink again." And I hung on to that, so I said, "Okay, I'll prove my point. I'll stop drinking, and then I'll be able to start drinking again like a normal person." So I stopped drinking. They put me on all sorts of medication at that time. And about 2 months before he said it was okay for me to drink again, I counted down those days until I could drink again. And so I picked up a drink, and it was back to the same within about 2 or 3 days. And this pretty much happened over the next 4 or 5 years. So my drinking would get out of control. I'd end up in a hospital. I'd stop for a while. Then I'd eventually pick up again. And it was gradually getting worse and worse and worse. Drugs also became a part of my story. And so in that time, I had a lot of suicide attempts. And then when I picked up my last drink again, it was 2 years before I came into the fellowship. And this time I stopped trying to kill myself and stuff like that, but it just became daily drinking. So I would be at the pub every day at about 5 o'clock, and I'd probably leave the pub at 12 that night, or it could continue for days if I was taking drugs as well. And then on the 16th, well, actually on the 14th of February last year, I went out for a couple of hours, and And I said to myself, I'm just going out for a couple of hours to play poker. And I got home at midday the next day, and I couldn't be there for a friend. And he came around and he said, Lil, what are you doing to yourself? And I said, I know, my life is completely falling apart, and I need to stop drinking. And he said, yeah, I think you just need to stop for 6 weeks. And I said, no, I need to stop forever. And that's where I saw was my surrender to my step one, because I was never before that in all of those times that I'd be on the wagon that I was never able to admit that I couldn't drink. And I white knuckled it for 6 days, and then it was by my own choice I came to my first meeting, and that's where I saw the hope. I said to myself before I walked into the meeting, there's no way that I'm ever saying I'm an alcoholic. I'm just never. I don't mind coming to this place. I need to meet people that don't drink, because I know I can't drink, but I'm never admitting that I'm an alcoholic. And I turned up at this meeting, and I saw people share, and I saw people share their experience, and they weren't park bench drunks. They were people like me, and they looked like me, and they sounded like me, and I had this huge wave of relief that came over me, and I said, hi, I'm Lil, and I'm an alcoholic, that night when everyone else identified, and I nearly burst into tears of just sheer relief. And you know, these people asked me to come for dinner, and they told me to keep coming back, and that's what I did. And through these stories is where I got the hope, and that's, you know, and coming to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. So through all of the suicide attempts and all of that attention seeking, I could admit that I was insane. It was clearly obvious that I was insane. And I you know, because I used to pretend to, I'd fake the symptoms of bipolar to a psychiatrist so they wouldn't label me as an alcoholic. So that it wasn't, you know, I wanted to be called a drug addict because I didn't want to be an alcoholic. So there was clear evidence of a bit of insanity there for me. But so that wasn't a problem at all. And I saw the steps on the wall, and I saw people share about how their life had changed by working these steps. And I hated myself so much at that point in time of my life. I'd do anything. I was given that gift of desperation. I would do anything to change. I wanted to change everything about myself, because I couldn't stand being that person that I was. I couldn't stand hurting those people that I'd hurt. And, you know, my mum having to come over and drag people out of my house the next day. I didn't want to do that to people anymore. And I was just sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was either drunk or I was hungover. So I saw these steps on the wall, and I was willing, and I got my first sponsor, and she said, all you have to do is to be willing to believe that, you know, a power greater than you, that doesn't have to be God, it can be the grass under your feet if that's the power that you want. So I prayed under the shower the next day, and I asked for another sober day, just to remove my will to drink and to grant me another sober day, and I had another sober day, and there the faith started to come, and I did that for a while, and then when it was up to after a couple of weeks, someone suggested maybe you might want to get down on your knees, and I got down on my knees, and I didn't know what I was praying to. I felt really, really uncomfortable praying at first, and I was praying to the ceiling, and I didn't even really know what to say, so I just said the Serenity Prayer and just kept on those little prayers to start with, and that's where my faith has grown from that. And then I ended up going back to my Christian roots, and I never had that awful Catholic upbringing of an awful church and do's and don'ts or anything like that. So it wasn't hard for me to call my higher power God. And at first I just called it God because I needed something to call it. And then it grew. And as I sort of worked through the program more, I had a craving for spirituality. I had a craving for faith. I had a craving for more. And so I went to church a few times. I went to, I thought the Anglican church was a bit boring. So I went to this sort of evangelical church with another member in Richmond. And you know, I went there a few times. It wasn't quite for me, but that, you know, it gave me sort of more experiences. And as through my sobriety, I've had circumstances and situations that have given have given me proof that I've been looked after. I mean, I was always looked after during my drinking. If I look back and reflect on the times that I've woken up safe in my bed the next morning when I have no idea how I got home. 3 months before I got sober, I got hit by a car, and I, according to the barmaid that witnessed it, I went flying into the air and landed on the road and stood up and walked away to tell the tale. So there's that evidence of that higher power or God working in my life. And this is why I love this step, is because it gives us the hope, and it's the step that's brought me to where I am today. So, as I said, I started going to church a little bit, and then in January this year, I felt a calling to study theology and to go into ministry, and so I started in true alcoholic fashion. I took on a theology degree and a ministry diploma all at once, and it was a bit much for me. So I've actually dropped the theology degree, and now I'm just studying ministry. And I can't tell you, and I know not everyone's into religion and church, and there's parts of religion and church that I don't like either. But what it's given me is a direction, and it's studying in this ministry program that I'm working on Fridays. I'm learning all about pastoral care, and the thing is that we all do pastoral care on a day-to-day basis in AA. It's amazing what we get given here, and what the what going to church and stuff like that it brings me is another sense of community. So in my first year of sobriety, I had the AA community, and that was pretty much all I had. And now I've got that other sense of community, and I've just, what it's given me is a really a thirst for wanting to know what God's will is for me, and to be able to carry that out to the best of my ability, and because everything is God's will. I mean, it says in the big book, either God is everything or he is nothing. So so I just like to be able to carry that out to the best of my ability. And you know, there have been times in my sobriety that faith in God or that faith in the higher power is all that you've got. Because you know there can be certain situations that you are completely powerless over, but there's nothing that you can do. I was so used to manipulating everything and everyone in my life, but you know there are some things, and it's like our alcoholic problem. We are powerless over alcohol. I know that I can't drink, but I can't not drink, and I'm fucked, really, excuse the language, but, you know, unless I have that faith and that power greater than myself, and unless I pray and do all the things that I need to do to stay sober, I can't stay sober on my own will. There's no way, you know. I would be driving to the pub like, I'm not going to pick up a drink. But unless, you know, and there have been times where I've been absolutely haunted by drinking thoughts. And it's just that non-stop praying and God doing for me what I can't do for myself. That's really that's kept me sober. And I remember when I was about 11 months sober, I was so scared about picking up a drink before my first year of sobriety. And it was that, you know, that faith that's got me through. And I think this isn't a step that you just go through and you finish. It's a step that's always growing and always changing in you. And I'm really looking forward to learning more about, you know, my spirituality or my faith. And I think it's, you know, it's a lifelong process. And I'm good at talking to God. I'm not very good at sitting there and listening. I'm shocking at meditation. So that's the next step for me. But thank you for asking me to share today. And we'll get on to next step. Thank you.
This share and other shares like it are available from our website, stepsweekend.aagroup.org.au. Thanks for letting us share.